Welcome, everybody, to Loose Screws on Fifth Wrist Radio, and thank you for tuning in. Fifth Wrist was set up by enthusiasts to serve the community by giving community members the opportunity to review their own watches. If you haven't already, check out the website, fifthwrist.com, and review one of your watches to help another community member make the right decision. My name is Bob. I'm at Brownsville Watch Guy on Instagram, and tonight I'm very excited to introduce you my guest. His name is Michael, and he's at CT Watch Guy on Instagram. Michael, how are you tonight?
Hey, Bob. Doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for taking time and coming along, and I appreciate you taking the time. I know we're both in the U.S., so it's 8:30 for me, 9:30 for you. So we'll start first with a wrist check and a drink check.
Okay.
What's on your wrist tonight and what are you drinking?
On my wrist in true fashion is an Endicar Jetgraph Mark III. And I'm actually drinking water, so nothing special.
We don't judge. We prefer alcohol, but everybody gets to do whatever they want. That's the beauty about Fifth Wrist. So tonight I am sporting my Endicar Sherpa Ops.
Very nice.
I think it's the Mark II. Pretty sure it's the Mark II. Because the Mark III, correct me if I'm wrong, has the Saturn with the two rings on it.
Correct. Yep.
Yeah, so definitely the Mark II. And I am drinking bourbon called Walking Stick. Because you need a freaking stick after you're done with this shit. I think it's like 90% proof.
Oh, God. Have fun with that.
Yeah, no. I put one ice on it and then I'm just sipping it. That's it. Well, take it easy. I ran out of beer, which is usually what I like to drink at night when I do a podcast. But I figured, hey, let's use the walking stick tonight. But anyways, let's get started, man. How about you tell us a little bit about yourself, Michael, how you started in your watch journey. And I usually like to ask people if you remember your first watch.
Yeah. You know, I'm a normal guy, or so I like to think. I'm 32. I live in Connecticut, like my Instagram handle says. I'm about 50 miles northeast of New York City, married, two kids, have a 2.5-year-old daughter, 10-month-old son, work in the super exciting commercial insurance industry. But my watch journey started, I guess, when I was fairly young. I had a close family member who was a watch collector. He was a diver, and he primarily collected dive watches, and like any watch nerd, his collection was always changing. Things were always coming in and going out. And whenever I'd see him, which was pretty regularly, he'd show me like the newest stuff that he got and how they worked. And I remember being fascinated by how his watches were actually functional tools necessary for him to use when he was diving. One memory I have is he let me put on all his dive gear and just sit on the bottom of the deep end of his pool for like 30 minutes. And I thought it was the coolest thing. But, you know, through school and college, I maintained a casual interest in watches, but never really had the money to buy anything noteworthy. Once I finished grad school and got a job and had started to make some money, I bought my first real watch, which was an Omega Speedmaster Professional, the one that has the Hessellite crystal and comes in the big box with all the accessories. And I picked that because I knew about the Speedmaster's historical significance, and I had, and I still have to this day, a thing for chronographs. And, you know, the design of the Speedmaster is just timeless, and it was a starting point where I figured I couldn't go wrong. I ended up selling that watch sometime later as I kind of refined my interests, but the Speedmaster will always be a special watch, and I think I've had two or three over the years.
So do you regret selling that Speedmaster?
Maybe from like a sentimental perspective, but, you know, I mean, it's a watch that's easily replaceable. You know, they're not hard to find or in the grand scheme of things, terribly expensive. So not really, but it'd be cool to have, just like to say, hey, this was the first, you know, real expensive-ish watch that I ever bought.
Yeah. Of course, I still have my first watch I bought with, I don't know how many paychecks that were minimum wage. I don't wear it anymore, but like you said, it's basically for sentimental reasons that I keep it.
What was your first watch?
My first watch, I'm embarrassed to say, was a Tag Heuer Formula One Quartz.
Hey, you could have done worse.
Yeah, no, I mean, at the time, I thought it was the best thing ever. You know, I remember my friend had the chronograph version, I'm like, yeah, that's going to be a lot more paycheck. So I want to say I settled for the time only one, but I thought it was the coolest thing. You know, it had like the bezel was metallic, but the side, it had like the little plastic that said Tag Heuer. So I just thought it was the coolest thing. I still have it. And it was in a bracelet too. But back then I had no freaking idea what was a quartz, what was an automatic, right. What was a manual wind. I just knew it was a tag. I was badass, and it took me and it took me a shit ton of paychecks to pay it, and I actually put it on layaway, so that was even worse. It's like having a baby and just like going and visiting every now and then and seeing it and just making the payment, and then finally I got it, and man, I wore the shit out of that watch. I think I wore it for like 6 years straight, nonstop.
See, at least that's a cool story. Like, you know, I wouldn't sell that. Like, you put on layaway, you saved up, like. You wore, like, for me, it's just like, you know, I went to the store and I bought it, and like, it, you know, it was some, I don't know. There's more sentimental value, I think, with your first watch than mine. I probably would have kept it if I had that kind of history with it, I guess.
Oh, no. Yeah, of course. Like, I can tell you straight up, like, it's a piece of shit, probably, but it's my piece of shit.
It's all that matters, man.
Yeah, no, I'll probably pass it down to my kid. He probably won't wear it. It's just sentimental. It'll be like, hey, if you work hard, this is what, I don't know if it's a good example. Like if you work hard, this is what you can get, because it's a piece of shit now, but more like a lesson. Like if you work hard, look, this is what I don't know how many paychecks it was. It was a minimum wage, man. Back then, minimum wage was $5.25, I think. So now I think we're at like $7.25 or $7.50. Doesn't make that much of a difference, but I think I was like 19 years old making minimum wage. So
yeah. It's a good lesson, and, you know, saving up for something and, you know, not just impulsively buying something on credit that you can't afford, and definitely a good lesson.
Yeah, I don't think I learned it, man. Those credit cards will drive you crazy one day.
Yeah, no, that's true.
impulse buys, they can get you.
Slippery slope.
Oh, for sure. But hey, on what you were telling me right now, do you remember what dive watches your family member had? I just thought that was pretty cool.
He had a bunch. I mean, he had Omegas. He had, you know, a couple Submariners. He had some micro brands. I think he had a couple Tag Heuers. I mean, he kind of had a lot. You know, he was a modern watch collector. So, you know, it was all modern stuff. But, you know, kind of had a little bit of everything. It was cool, especially for him, because like he used his watches the way they were intended to be used. And I think that's the coolest thing.
Yeah, I have a couple of divers, and I think that most I dive is in the bathtub when I give my 2-year-old his bath every night. And those are the modern ones, because I don't dare get any vintage ones wet.
No, definitely not.
But I forgot to mention this to the people listening. Michael is a well-known Anacar collector. And for those that haven't read any of my reviews on Fifth Wrist, you should. I've made a couple of Anacar ones. Yeah, Michael's a very well-known Anacar collector. His Anacar collection is very, very cool. And he's also going to be the host of our first ever 2021 U.S. Anacar group meeting. We'll be hosting it at his house.
Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed with the pandemic that actually goes down. But I hope it does. Certainly hope it does.
Yeah, I hope it does too, man. It'll be nice to meet all the guys. I know you know at least three or four in person that they're around your area, but I mean, I don't really know anyone. We have a little WhatsApp group that it's all Anacar folks here in the US, because there's a Europe, right? There's a European WhatsApp group.
Yeah. Well, it's mostly Europeans, and then there's a few of us Americans in there, but yeah, predominantly Europeans. But that's a fun one too.
Yeah, I don't know. The Anacar community is really, really cool. So on the dive watches that your relative had, did you happen to run by any Anacars, or was it just modern?
No, it was all just modern stuff. I don't even know if he would know what Anacar is, but no, just modern stuff.
Not a lot of folks do. I think it's still one of those hidden gems.
Yep.
But now that I've kind of opened it to the Anacar subject, how about we roll on that? And can you tell me a little bit about why Anacar on your end? What was it that attracted you to Anacar? And do you remember your first Anacar that you bought?
So I discovered Enikar after I had started really getting more into vintage watches. I saw a Sherpa Graph somewhere. It must have been on Instagram or a dealer's website. I don't remember. But I mean, the design language of the watch just totally clicked with me. It was so unique and funky. And, you know, from the handset to the big Saturn logo to the printing on the dial, it was just so, so different. And at the same time, like, it had all the elements of a good chronograph and watch in general. I mean, good case construction, a Valju 72 movement. So from there, I started researching Enikar more and more and learned about, you know, their different and unique designs and how in many ways, like, they were a pioneering brand. And it all just really kind of spoke to me. The first Enikar that I bought for myself was, of course, a Sherpa Graph Mark III. Reverse panda dial.
Nice.
Really nice condition. Shout out to my friend Vince, a.k.a. at North Shore Chrono on Instagram. Bought it from him. He's a good friend and a fellow Enikar freak. Well, a few Enikars from him. But I still have the watch and don't think it'll go anywhere anytime soon.
So you went all out, man, with the Sherpa Graph. Like, usually I would have expected maybe like, oh, I started with, you know, like those 34, 35 mils date only. But no, you went all out. You'd like literally threw the house out the window.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I think that's kind of like my personality. I tend to go 0 to 100 for better or for worse. So
go big or go home.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's just the coolest watch and I love it. And like I said, it's not going anywhere anytime soon. So I'm happy with where I started.
We've mentioned it. It's still pretty under the radar. And I think those people that knew about it, I want to say maybe 8-5 years ago, they had great prices on them where, one, they were attainable. There were more pristine examples out there. And the price was just way different than what it is right now. So I'm kind of curious on how long have you been on the Enikar train?
Yeah. You know, it really hasn't been all that long compared to, like you said, some people that have really been into Enikars, like maybe a couple years. But I would say, like, especially in the last year and a half, I've really been fortunate enough to get some pieces that I've wanted. And so, yeah, you know, I guess in the grand scheme of things, it really hasn't been that long compared to like Martin and some of the other guys who are, you know, like super Enikar experts.
They were in the train way before it was a train, man. I'm with you. I've been like maybe a year and a half tops, but I'm going to say probably a year on the Enikar train. But man, I've seen people post like their mint jet graphs and their Sherpa graphs. And for those that don't know, you can just go ahead and Google them. But they're basically awesome chronographs with Valju 72 movements. Well, the jet graph has what, the 726, because it has the GMT complication in it?
Yep.
I believe. But those people, man, I remember seeing some guy from Egypt saying that he got his mint jet graph neo stock condition for $500.
Oh, man. That's...
I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? $500?
Insane.
Like, where was I like 10 years ago? Why didn't I say like, oh shit, yeah, let me find this cool Enikar brand, you know, and let me buy 10 jet graphs, man. I'd be banking. First of all, I'd have an insane collection.
Right.
Second of all, I'd make a huge, huge profit.
I think that goes with like a lot of watches though, not just Enikar, right? Like, I mean, it wasn't all that long ago that 5513s and 1675s and, you know, they were trading considerably less. And, you know, I think it's just like with anything, it gets more expensive as time goes on. And especially in the watch community, as hype builds and all of that, prices just go up. So.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. On those examples that you're saying, I think those were kind of price were inflated because of hype. On Enikar, I still don't understand, because I think Enikar right now is in the middle where it's still under the radar, but it's not that well known. And like you said, the two brands that come to mind, well, three brands that come to mind, two are the ones that I think that all of a sudden people that were able to buy those watches, and I'm talking about Universal Genève and Heuer. So when they were able to buy those watches when they weren't expensive, it was awesome for them. But that was, I want to say, that maybe was what, 10, maybe 12 years ago. And then all of a sudden, they just climbed, but I don't think there was a steady point where it just went middle ground. I think they went from unknown like in the vintage world to all of a sudden just climbing up. And I think for Universal Genève, what did it was that, was it the Nina auction or was it a Clapton auction that just went through the roof? In a car, I feel like they just don't move beyond a Universal Genève tri-compacts price. Or I don't know if it's because we don't have anyone. We do have a famous driver, but I don't know, man. You know, Jim Clark, but a lot of people don't know about Jim Clark. But everybody knows about the Nina. Like,
yeah,
we do have Eric Wynn. You know, he tells about Intercar. He tells anybody that asks, and I've heard him in several other podcasts. You know, and he talks Intercar. Like, I think he really appreciates Intercar. And with Martin's book coming out, like, I feel like people kind of knew a lot more about it. But it's not like I want to see it climb, if I'm honest, because that would take the privilege of us Intercar collectors to buy it. And they're still somewhat at a reasonable price. But if they keep climbing and they climb to the value of, let's say, a Nina or a Eric Clapton, I'll be very sad to say that I'm out of the game.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, they're definitely becoming more well-known and popular, and interest is growing. And I think, like you said, I mean, we have folks like Eric, who's been a great ambassador for the brand, and Martin, whose book has just been tremendous. And so do I think they'll ever get to the level of like the Claptons or the Ninas? No, unless maybe we're talking about like, well, I mean, some of them, I guess, are already there, right? If you're talking about like a Sterling Moss, or you know, some of the really like obscure stuff. But you know, your average Sherpa Graf or your average Jet Graf, I don't see that happening, but I definitely see a slow, steady creeping up in price, which, you know, I think is inevitable as more people get interested in the brand.
Yeah, for sure. I've seen maybe a 10 to 20% price increase from a year. From I remember when I was looking at my Sherpa Graf that I sold to get my Jet Graf. I want to say it's maybe a 20% increase in prices. But right now, I feel like it's stalled. We'll touch about this later, and I want to hear your opinion about that Super Graf that was up. And for those that don't know, the Super Graf is the unicorn of Intercars. You know, it's the holy grail. It's when you see a Super Graf and you'll hear that like church music or the angels singing. You know, it's that unicorn that you don't see that normally doesn't exist, but you still believe it does. And there's some out there, but we'll talk about that a little bit later on the show. Like I said, I feel like it's at a stall right now, and it might be COVID. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on the watches too. Like Ultra Dives are really hot right now, and I've definitely seen prices on those go up even in the last 6 months, like quite a bit. You know, maybe Sherpa Grafs have stalled a little bit. I feel like Jets and Super Jets, you know, they're pretty hot. It depends, right? There's a lot of factors: condition, provenance. You know, it depends. So I think it's kind of a mix. I would agree. Maybe some stuff is kind of plateaued, but there are some things that are hot. Like I said, Ultra Dives, I think, are definitely like the hottest Intercars right now for sure. In the last 6 months, those have definitely gone up in price. So it just depends.
On the Ultra Drives, I blame Eric Wynn.
Yeah, he loves. He loves his Ultra Dives.
He loves the Ultra Dives. And then he was the first one. I don't know if you saw on Instagram. There was someone that put the Ed Sheeran pic of him with the Ultra.
Yes.
Eric Wynn was the first one to actually say about it. You know, he was the first one to talk about it. He was the one that said, like, I think he had, if I remember correctly, he had an Ultra Drive on his website for sale, which is, I think, you have one like it. I have one like it. But it's the one that Ed Sheeran has. And he said, I think on his description, it said at the end, like the one Ed Sheeran has.
Yeah, that when I saw that photo, I mean, I'm an Ed Sheeran fan. I've been to an Ed Sheeran concert. Like, I think he makes pretty catchy music. So I thought that was cool. Like that, you know, to see someone like that wearing an Intercar when obviously he has unlimited funds to get whatever he wants. That's really cool to me.
He's a very cool guy. I like him in that Beatles movie. I can't remember what it's called. Yesterday. He does a cameo there for maybe 20, 25 minutes. And I've also read that every city he goes to that he has a concert or country, he'll buy a watch, like a local watch.
Oh, that's cool.
He's a very likable guy, and I think it's because he keeps it private. The only thing we see is his persona on stage. So you don't really know anything if he's an asshole outside of stage, because you really can't tell, because there's nothing about him off stage. So I think that's pretty cool. I'll go with he's a great guy.
I think he probably is. Let's assume he is.
We'll assume it. But all right, so I have another question for you. Well, actually, I have a couple of questions for you, but let's get this rolling again. And on your Instagram, you have Anacar, you have University of Geneva, you actually have some vintage Rolex. It's mostly vintage, correct?
Yeah.
I think I saw one or two modern, but
there's a very select few modern stuff in there, but mostly vintage.
Yeah, I want to say 95% of what I've seen, and that's just what I've seen. You might have more that you keep private, but we're just going to go with what people can see on your Instagram. It's 95% vintage. So,
yep.
And like I said, you have University of Geneva and you have Rolex, all vintage. Why Anacar? I feel like you focus more on Anacar.
Yeah. Oh, I certainly do.
Why Anacar versus like Universal Geneve? Do you try to balance it out, or would you want to try to balance it out at one day? You know, is that like the focus of your collection?
Yeah. I mean, Anacar is definitely the focus of my collection and my scholarship and what I'm interested in. But, you know, Universal Geneve and Rolex are definitely two other things that I am interested in and do collect, and then some select other stuff. But, you know, if you ask me, like, what is it that attracts me about Anacar, you know, I would say first it's the watches, obviously. They're so unique from a design perspective. And I think whether it's Rolex, Omega, Patek, AP, Breitling, Heuer, I think there's a lot of uniformity in the design language with those brands. And with Anacar, it's just like they went against the grain on everything from an aesthetic standpoint. You know, the checkered racing GMT hands on jet graphs, the candlestick second hands on some of the dive watches, the weird turtle shaped cases that you'll see, bright, sometimes even like flashing colors, reds, oranges, yellows, superfluous features like, you know, the huge crown guards on the ultra dives. I just love it all. And I think it fits my personality too. You know, I guess I like to think I have a bright and upbeat kind of not taking life too seriously kind of personality. So, you know, that's a big part of it. And then I think another thing is really the story of the brand. From the start of Anacar to the end of Anacar, they really have a different story than a lot of other brands. They were always family owned, or at least the Anacar, as we know it, that we're talking about. The Anacar watches you see today are really something completely different.
You can go ahead and say they're pieces of shit.
Yeah, they're just, you know, they're not at all really affiliated with the Anacar that we know, other than by name and logo. You know, I guess just for the folks that don't know, just to give a really quick overview of the Anacar, like, history, the family name behind Anacar was Racine. And when they started the brand, the family, the Racine name was already trademarked. So they used Anacar as an anagram of the Racine name. It's just Racine spelled backwards. And through multiple generations, they built up a, you know, quite a large watch company, and they employed a lot of local people in their factories in Switzerland and distributed watches all over the world. And, you know, some of their biggest markets were non-traditional watch markets, China, Brazil, Mexico, you know, not the markets of the United States and Europe that a lot of other brands really distributed to. They had a knack for PR stunts and interesting advertising campaigns and slogans. They once strapped a watch to the keel of a boat that was crossing the Atlantic just to prove how water resistant the watch was. And they had some pretty famous brand ambassadors, like you had said before, the F1 driver Jim Clark, tennis great Ken Rosewall, and, you know, like some other brands, ultimately the quartz crisis did them in. They went bankrupt, sold to a Chinese conglomerate, which operates, like I said, the Anacar brand that exists today. But just an interesting history, and I think different than a lot of other vintage watch brands that are commonly collected. And then, you know, I think the last part of the puzzle for me as to, you know, why I really focus so much on Anacar is just the quality of the watches. They're really well-built, high-quality watches, whether it's their in-house AR caliber movements and their proprietary ultrasonic technology. Like we said before, they used Valju movements and Venus movements in a lot of their chronographs. their partnership with Irvin Piquerez EPSA, the bayonet case system, their super compressor technology, you know, so many reasons that they punch above their price point from a quality perspective. And, you know, they were watches that went to the top of Everest and Kilimanjaro and on famous dive expeditions. And a car was commissioned by the Polish military. And it's funny, every time my watchmaker services one of my Anacars, he always comments on the overall quality of the watches. I would say for people that are interested in stuff, we mentioned this before, I think Martin Vandervin's book is just the best starting point. He's at Vandervenus on Instagram, and his book is called Time for a Change, Discovering Vintage Anacar, but it's far and away the best scholarship on Anacar to date, and it goes into way more detail than kind of what I just dragged on about, so that's a great starting place for anyone that's interested.
Martin came on Roman's show, so if you have not listened to it, I would highly, highly recommend you go give that a listen. First of all, he's a great guy. And second of all, the book is, we call it the Anacar Bible, because that's basically the only thing we have written that we can kind of check and reference and just have it as a piece of history. Because honestly, if he would have not done that, I'm 100% sure this brand would have been lost. Like, it's already lost. I mean, it would have just stayed in the Anacar community. And the Anacar community is very small compared to other vintage timepieces, you know, like Heuer, even Breitling, even though Breitling hasn't, that was the third brand I had mentioned earlier,
right?
Even though Breitling has never escalated to prices of Heuer or UG, they have a lot more people collecting it than Anacar has. The Anacar community is really, really small, and I'm gonna say 8 out of 10 people are there to help and to guide, and they'll love to help you. They will love to guide you, and they'll give you free advice, and they can talk in a car. Myself included, I'm one of those. Yep. I will talk in a car as long as I want, as long as I can, basically as long as you allow me to, you know, and I'm more than happy. I've converted 2 people already into buying an in a car. Well, actually 2 of them were through Instagram. One of them, I still keep in touch, and we've become friends. And the Anacar community is awesome. I think that's one of the things that sets it apart. I feel like with other brands, with anything, you know, you're going to have people that are jealous or that are just plain out assholes. But for the most part, everybody's really, really nice, because I feel that since it's still a small community, everybody's out to help. Mostly everyone's out to help.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a super welcoming and friendly and generous with time and knowledge community. And, you know, like you said, I think compared to, you know, Rolex and some of the other brands we've thrown out there, I mean, the scholarship is just not as developed outside of Martin's book and some other stuff. But, you know, the one thing about the Anacar community is, like, there's this constant pursuit of knowledge amongst collectors. And I just think it's so cool. And we're kind of all in it together and discovering things together. And the community is one of the most fun parts about all of this for me.
The cool part about Anacar is every time I've had any doubts, there's usually 3 people I go to. First, I'll go to Matt. You guys want to follow him? He also has a great collection of Anacars. He's at Horology Biology. I usually go and ask him first, and then I'll go either to, the second is usually Steve or Martin. And I'll be like, hey, what do you think about this? You know, things that I'm not quite sure, and they've been collecting for years and years. And I love the answer they give me all the time is, it looks right to me, but you know, you never know within a car. It could be something we have never seen. Like, I had a question on my white dial Sherpa graph where mine has 2 orange subdial hands. And usually you only see it with 1 orange subdial hand. And I asked Matt, and he said, I think it's fine. I think it looks everything looks right to me. I mean, Martin basically said, like, you know, there could be an explanation in it that Anacar was so customer service oriented, and you could customize, and it was all based on the distributors. So if you were in, I don't know, let's say in the US, and you had in whomever the US distributor was, you could go and tell him, hey, I want 3 orange subdial hands, and they would do it. It wasn't, nothing was set in stone where, oh, no. It has to be 2 black subdial hands and 1 orange. Like, you could basically do whatever you want. And that's why they all say, like, with Anacar, you don't know.
You unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension.
Right. Yeah, and Eckhart, I think, did a pretty poor job of documenting things. So a lot of times we don't know. Then we just go off what we've seen and any scholarship that's out there to date. But yeah, you know, we're always learning new things. And it's not like, you know, the Rolex world where it's like, okay, a Mark II dial should look like this. A Mark III dial should look like this. I mean, there's kind of that with some models, but there still is always stuff that pops up and you're like, okay, this is different, but I think this is okay. That's what makes it.
Yeah. So like, I see it like, okay, there's a set standard that we think it is, but every now and then that set standard kind of gets moved because we see something that we've never seen before. And we're like, oh shit. Okay. We'll put this as the outlier where it's one of the examples that can happen, but then you never see another one again.
Right. Yep.
And then 10 years later, we're going to see it and we're like, oh, okay, yeah, look, there was one guy in, I don't know, in Zimbabwe that had it. Okay, so now there's two samples of it. It's just, I just find it so amusing and so exciting, honestly. It's just seeing shit that no one else has. And what I was going to tell you is Inikar, I feel special owning Inikar because not a lot of people have it. And it's not that well known yet. So
yeah.
And everything you've said is exactly the same way I feel. So the funkiness, nothing's like the same. I feel like they hire different designers every couple of years. Because the only thing that kind of stayed the same, and I'm going to assume it was because of the supplier, was their hands. You know, so their hands stay the same for a couple of years. And then they change to different hands. And then they change. But those I see the only things that are consistent. Otherwise, their designs fucking completely different every couple of years. So I don't know if they hired a different designers every couple of years. That's why they changed and they have no fucking record of anything. I mean, they were really, really bad at
it. Yeah, it's, you know, I don't know the reason for that and like the record keeping. I mean, it could just be it was a family company and it was kind of a flat organization and, you know, it just wasn't this big conglomerated company or, you know, 800-pound gorilla where everything is set in stone. So maybe people had the freedom to kind of do things how they wanted within the confines of Inikar. I don't know. But, you know, we're constantly learning. And I guess, like you said, it just keeps it fun and interesting and fresh.
It's I call it the Inikar charm, you know, because it has a charm to it.
Absolutely.
It has so much of a charm that it made you write an article for Rescapement, right?
Yeah. I did. I did an article for Rescapement, and then I did a podcast / interview with Martin for them.
Nice. Do you want to tell people a little bit of about your article? I found it really, really interesting because you kind of went the way I didn't think you were going to go.
Yeah.
You didn't give the usual recommendation. So how about you tell us a little bit about what it was about and just tell us about what you wrote. It was an excellent article, by the way. So if people want to go read it, it's on Rescapement and I'll put a link on the show notes for it.
Yeah, no. You know, first off, I mean, I think Rescapement is doing some really interesting and cool stuff. And Tony, the guy that runs it, he's the man, and he's been a great advocate for Inikar and has given me a platform to ramble about Inikar. So I've had fun working with them, and it's on the to-do list to do more of it this year, if time permits. But as far as my article, it was really like three good introductory pieces for what I call like an Inicurious collector. So someone who doesn't know Inikar and kind of wants to dip their toes in the water. So my recommendations were a Sherpa Jet or Sherpa Superjet, a Big Eye, and a Sherpa Date. And, you know, I still stand by those picks. I think from a cost perspective, they're all relatively palatable entry points into the brand. I think with the Jet, you get, you know, that the funk fact, the Inikar funk factor to the max. So, you know, the checker, if you go with like a Mark II, the checker GMT hand, the colorful inner bezel, you know, some of them have the checkered racing dial even. So depending on what you get, really is quintessential Inikar. And then the Big Eye, I think the Big Eye was the one, you know, in some of my Inikar chats, like everyone's like, oh, that was an interesting pick. And like, I don't know. I just think the Big Eye is a really cool watch. The cushion case, the clashing subdials with one being larger than the other. Of course, like the Inikar funk we keep talking about. They made some with a factory polished case, and then some with a factory brushed case. They made white dials, blue dials. I've seen black dials. And again, like, you know, they've gotten a little more expensive, but you can still pick a nice one up for $2,500, $3,000. And I think there's a lot of value there. And then the Sherpa date was my choice. Like, if someone wanted to kind of not go crazy on, like, the Anikar crazy, just, you know, a more sterile kind of traditional watch, you know, and see if they kind of just like the way it feels and maybe the technical side of it before they went into, like, the crazy aesthetics. And Sherpa date, you can get them for less than $1,000. But that's what Ken Rosewall, you know, his watch that he wore for Anikar was a Sherpa date. And, you know, I think they're cool. Like 34, 35, 36 millimeter, you know, pretty simple watches, but elegant. And they can be worn with a suit. They can be worn, you know, with a t-shirt and jeans. So, you know, that was my logic behind that pick. Where did you think I was going to go with that article? I'm curious to know.
I was surprised not to see the Sherpa guide and the Sherpa graph.
Well, so I didn't pick the Sherpa graph only because, you know, from a price perspective, it's kind of one of the pricier Anikar models. So I figured for, like, I didn't want to be that guy that's like, well, you're interested in Anikar, here, buy a $7,000 watch. Like, I wanted to make it fairly reasonable. And then the guide, I don't know. I actually have never owned a guide, to be honest. I'd like to pick one up. They're bigger. They're 42 millimeters. I have a small wrist, and 40 for me is really pushing it. So 42 millimeter watches have always worn quite big on me, you know, and just not having owned one, I didn't think putting one in there made sense, but you know, super cool watches for sure.
I like your picks, and would you mind telling our listeners that don't know about Anikar? So you said the Sherpa date, you said the size. Would you mind telling them about, and the reason why I want them to know is because the big guy is a little different. So Anikar, and this is a 1960, 1970 watches. So back then, you got to remember, folks, that they had different cases shapes. So would you mind telling the folks about the big guy, the size and the case shape?
Yeah, so it's 38 millimeters. It's a cushion case, so it wears pretty fair to its 38 millimeter size because you don't have really lugs to contend with. What was the other question?
Would you mind telling folks about, like, the Anikar sizes for your one for the big guy? I want folks to know because, one, it's a very cool watch, and two, this is a 1970s watch, so they played with cases differently than they do now. Although I'm kind of seeing the same shape coming back to watches nowadays. But do you mind also on the jig, would you tell them what size they are? Because the one thing about vintage watches, if people want to get in, and I learned this also, is what you see in pictures is not really representative of what the size is. And some sellers, like on eBay, or sometimes even on forums, you know, they don't really know sometimes, and they don't bother to measure them. And then you receive the watch, you know, like if you have a big wrist, and then you see it on pictures and it looks awesome. And then you receive it and it's a 32 millimeter and you're very surprised and disappointed.
Yeah. So the big eye is a 38 millimeter cushion case shaped watch. So I think it wears pretty fair to the 38 millimeter size. You know, there's no lugs to contend with. And then the jet, I use jet interchangeably for the Sherpa jet and the Sherpa super jet. So the Sherpa jet is 36 millimeters and the Sherpa super jet is 40 millimeters. Both are a really nice wearing watch. I think the Sherpa jet is just like, for me, I have like 6.25, maybe 6.5 on a hot summer day sized wrists. And the 36 millimeter jet wears just like perfect on me. Like if I could pick one like watch size, then that could be the only size watch I could own and wear, it would be that. It just fits me personally like a glove. But you know, 36 millimeters, I think, is a size that really works on anyone, small wrist or big wristed. So yeah, those are the sizes.
Awesome. Yeah, because here's my next question is, and I know you and I have probably made mistakes. And if folks want to go out and kind of venture into the Anikar world, let's say they read my reviews on which I need to persuade you to see if you want to write a review at Fifth Wrist for your vintage pieces. That way our Anikar reviews grow. But let's say folks go in and read your article from Restatement, and let's say they want to venture and say, shit, you know what? I'm kind of digging this brand. I'm kind of digging Anikar. What's the best tip you have for them? Because you and I have probably, we have made mistakes on in a car probably and on vintage buys.
Yeah.
So someone that, let's say it's the first vintage watch and they listen to this podcast, they go check out in a car, they go check out your article. What are a couple of things you would recommend to them that would help them out in buying an in a car, their first in a car?
Yeah. I mean, I think with anything, not just in a car, the first thing I'll say is like accumulate knowledge before you think about making a purchase. You know, with Enicar, whatever model or models it is that you're interested in, learn about the different dials, the handsets, the calibers, like what a Mark One should look like, a Mark Two. There's so much good information out there, even given the lack of information on Enicar, that, you know, you can really educate yourself and mitigate the risk of you making a mistake. Martin's book, great place. Thespringbar.com has a whole series of articles on Enicar, which are really helpful. Enicar101.org, Enicarforums.com. There's a lot out there. And then what we were saying before, it like, you know, don't be afraid to reach out to Enicar collectors on social media with questions. I can't say it enough. It's such a welcoming, friendly, helpful, passionate, single watch brand focused community that I know. You know, look at the watches we post on social media, see what it is you like. We talked about it before, but like some good follows are Martin Vanderven. He's at Vandervenus. Steve, he's at Enicar Forums. Matt, who is at Horology_Biology. Nico, who is at _Jim Jupiter. The legendary Eric Wind, of course. And that's really just the tip of the iceberg. There's a ton of great Enicar collectors that are active on Instagram. In terms of like, you know, maybe where to buy Enicar watches,
Yeah, let's say most people go to the first place they go is eBay.
Yep.
What shouldn't they not do at eBay for in a car? And you know where I'm going with this.
Yeah, I mean, eBay is tough. I mean, like there's tons of Enicars on there. Again, I think if you educate yourself, you'll mitigate like, you know, the risk. If you look at who the seller is, look at their reviews, make sure there's good pictures. See if there's any concerns, ask the seller questions. But I mean, outside of eBay too, like Enicar Forums has a buy and sell section. And there's a lot of Enicar enthusiasts on there that, you know, you can really trust. And Chrono 24, you know, there's stuff on there. And, you know, I think the old adage of just buy the seller applies here. You know, sometimes you'll see Enicars posted on Instagram. You know, I think with Enicar in any brand, but you see a good amount of it with Enicar that, you know, and you got to be aware of it. Franken watches, you know, incorrect handsets or incorrect crowns or reprinted dials or just pieced together from whatever watches, you know, so just be aware of that. And I think there's certain places where maybe you're more common to buy one of those watches than other places, but definitely something to be aware of. Reloom dials and handsets. If that stuff bothers you, you know, ask the question ahead of time if the dial's been reloomed or more commonly the hands have been reloomed. And then, you know, one other thing I'll add, and this isn't Enicar specific, but I think condition is always king. And there's a lot of correct watches out there, but, you know, they might have oil stains on the dial or badly cracking loom on the hands that's eventually just going to completely fall out, or loom plots on the dial that are missing altogether. The cases have been destroyed by bad watchmakers and that have overpolished them. And, you know, if you're not an OCD freak like me, more power to you. Sometimes I wish I could see past certain things, but, you know, we talked about, I guess, the quote investment side of all this. And I think as time goes on, good watches are going to be harder to find and more in demand. And I think, you know, spending a little more money now that it takes to get a good watch will pay off in the long run. And I think it's also more enjoyable when you can look down and not see something that's been beat to a pulp. And, you know, patina and history and honesty is all good stuff. But there's kind of a fine line between that and damage. And damage, to me at least, is bothersome. So Eric Wind always talks about condition, and I'll second it. I think you can never go wrong being patient, doing your research, and buying the best condition watch that you can find.
I was going to say, you've been hanging and talk too much with Eric because he always says condition, condition, condition.
It's true. when you look down and you see something that you took your time finding and found the best example of it that you could, that was within your price constraints, it's a rewarding thing. And to me, it's important. And I always seek to find the best example of whatever it is that I'm looking for. And if it means spending a little more money, I'm generally of the mindset that will pay off. If and when maybe you go to sell the watch or just the general enjoyment value you get out of it, I think it pays off. Like that new old stock jet you just got. Like I remember when you were, or the jet graph that you just got, when you were thinking about buying it, we were talking and I was like, you know, a watch in that condition just doesn't come up that often. And if you can, you know, afford it and you want it, like go for it. You're not going to find one that nice again or for a long time.
I'm glad you admitted the price because in case my wife is listening. It was very cheap.
Yeah, it was like what, $500?
yeah, at trade.
That's a classic. I always tell my wife when new watches come in, oh, it's a trade. Or
this old thing, I've already had it. I just changed the dial.
Yeah. Oh, just a new strap. You never noticed that?
The strap one is the best one. No, on that jet graph, I'm going to probably make a few people kind of cringe. But yeah, I do wear it. It was a new old stock jet graph.
Yeah. I've bought new old stock watches. I have a Sherpa jet that I bought that like still had the sticky plastic on the case back. And like, in my mind, you got to wear it. Just be careful with it and don't wear it when you're giving your kids a bath. And,
yeah.
But it's meant to be worn.
Did you take the stickers off?
No, it's like the purple sticky stuff that, you know,
was the wax.
Yeah, the wax is still on there, but I wear it, you know, and maybe it's not as new old stock as the day I bought it, but it's still pretty damn nice. And I get a heck of a lot of enjoyment out of wearing it. So
I have a feeling like in any, at least for me, like anything, I've gotten two new old stock ones. And on those at first, like what you said, I didn't want to wear them. I wasn't sure if I should even get them. But then once I started wearing them, I'm like, fuck it. They're mine. They're in great condition. If I need to sell them, yeah, they're not new old stock, but they're still in way better shape with the shit that we see out there.
You know?
And the providence is, oh, yeah, it was new stock and I'm the first idiot to wear it. So, yeah.
And I mean, let's be honest, right? These aren't like piece unique Patek, like minute repeaters that have been sitting in a safe for 60 years. Like, I mean, they're just not that. So anyone who gets a new old stock and a car or watch, whether it's me or them, I always say, you know, just wear it, enjoy it. It's what it was meant to be worn.
100%. And the beauty about Enicar, and I'm going to repeat the Enicar community, is most of our watches are traded within us.
Yeah, it's a pretty incestual collector community.
And if there's no takers within the community, then it goes out to the public. But usually, because, you know, I feel like it's not that it's the right thing to do, but I feel like, okay, here, let me, you know, because it works. Like you scratch my back, I scratch your back, you know, hey, who wants first dibs on this? You know, they don't. All right.
Yeah.
And you offer it to the public and you're hoping that, and most people do, you know, like you're hoping that whenever they want to sell something, they'll offer it to the community first, you know, like, hey, who wants first dibs? All right. And people do take it. And I mean, in our group chat, I mean, I've offered, and then I can't remember who else offered one, and parts and stuff that we might need. It always goes first dibs to like the Enicar community, and then it goes out to the public, obviously, or we put it out there and to let everyone know that, hey, this is available.
Yep. I think an interesting thing you just hit on is like parts. Like, you know, say with Rolex, right? You know, you need a bezel for a GMT. It's like, I mean, you got a plethora of options of, you know, every color, condition, fade, whatever you need, you'll find it. With Enicar, not so much. Like parts, especially certain parts, can be really obscure, borderline unobtainium. So the community is really good about like, oh yeah, you need this part, here I have it, or this person might have it, reach out to them, or whatever it is. Like, you know, shout out to my Enicar collector friend Paul. He's up in Boston. Paul, you know who you are. He, you know, him and I are constantly like exchanging parts, and you know, that's the beauty of the Enicar world. It's, you know, just a good group of folks, then everyone's just, you know, helping each other out, and it's a lot of fun. But I think that's a good point. Like, for someone looking to get into the NACAR world, like, that's something you should know. Like, if something were to break, it can be not as straightforward as like a Rolex or an Omega or something that's more common, like especially certain parts. Like, I have a one of the crowns on my Sherpa jet broke. The top crown, the canting stem that grabs the inner bezel and rotates it, and those stems are like super hard to find. You know, I thought I was screwed. I was like, I'm gonna have to have one made. It's gonna take forever. It's not gonna work. It's, you know, it's not gonna turn perfectly smooth. But I got lucky. Matt, horology at horology_biology, had one, and he sold it to me, and I got really lucky.
I was gonna say, like, I know who has it.
Yeah. But I mean, that's the thing. Like, with some of these watches, they just, if something breaks, like, you could be screwed. So just, not to scare people, but something to be aware of, because that's not necessarily the case with more popular, widely collected brands.
For those people that are wondering, how the hell did they come up with the name Sherpa? Because you've heard us say Sherpa Graph, Sherpa Guide, Sherpa Jet. Michael, would you mind telling them the Sherpa story? Because you kind of mentioned it in the beginning or somewhere in the podcast, but I don't think we touched that. And I feel like people might be wondering, who the hell is this Sherpa?
Yeah, well, so NACAR, when they were starting out, kind of had a series of like names that their watches went by, like Sea Pearl, and then it was Sherpas with an S at one point, and then ultimately they trimmed that down to Sherpa. One of their earliest watches went to the top of, God, I'm going to butcher the name of this mountain. I can never say it. Lhotse? Lhotse. It's a mountain in the Himalayas. One of the earlier NACAR models went to the top of that mountain. You know, the expedition was guided by Sherpas, and, you know, that's kind of the connection there. And then it just stuck with, you know, the Sherpa Graph, the Sherpa Jet, the, you know, whatever it is. So it's a cool name that's kind of stuck around since then.
So almost like every single thing is Sherpa. So Sherpa Jet, Sherpa Graph, Sherpa Ops. I might be missing some others, but in case you were wondering what the name Sherpa was and you were thinking Sherpa, reminds me of the guys, you know, from Mount Everest, you know, that the guides. Yes, those were the ones. You were right.
You're right.
But now back to the part thing. So yeah, so parts can be a concern. And like I said, the one thing that instantly comes to mind is the red pointer.
Yeah, that, you know, that those have been tricky to find, although I know someone who I think came onto a stockpile of them recently, but definitely a trickier NACAR part to find. Just, you know, not to scare people, but definitely something to just be aware of when you're getting into NACAR or some other brands too. Like, it's just not, it's not like Rolex, where, and not to say that every Rolex part is just like the easy find, but a lot more findable. You know, I had a build that I was working on where I found like a period correct case and dial and handset and all the parts, and I was putting it together, and there was one particular part I was waiting on, and like it delayed the completion of that by like a crazy long amount of time, because it was the date disc for the watch, but it had to be in red text and super hard to find, and just took a really long time, and I ended up having to buy a whole assembled watch just to pull the movement out to put into that and then sell off all the parts I didn't use. So just something to be aware of.
Like you said, it's, I think it applies for almost anything vintage, but NACAR is not, obviously it's not Rolex. So it's not like parts are just everywhere. You know, they're a little bit harder to find, but the key name for anything NACAR is patience. That's the name of the game for NACAR is patience. They do show up from time to time. The more you get involved in the community, the more leads you have to certain parts, and that they can point you in the right direction.
Yep.
But almost everything also appears on eBay. So talking again on eBay, as I mentioned before, the Super Graph. So the Super Graph, like I said, is the holy grail of any NACAR collector. It's the unicorn. Bigfoot, you know, shit that you don't really see that often.
One of them. It's one of them.
It's one of them for sure. What was your thought on the, so there was one on sale on eBay recently.
Yeah.
What was your thought about it? Was it what you were expecting?
Yeah, it was a nice one. The condition was quite good. I think it sold for around $8,000, which I think is a pretty fair number. So yeah, it was a nice one. It's weird. Like, I've seen a few Super Graphs come up for sale publicly as of late. Some nicer than others, but Super Graphs nonetheless. I think I've seen three in like the last month, which is weird, because prior to that, I don't think I saw any. So I don't know if that's a trend that's going to stick around or just a little hot streak. but definitely a Grail-ish Enikar piece for me at some point.
You've seen three? Holy shit, man.
Yeah.
Why didn't you communicate this in the group chat? I only saw the...
At least the other one. There was another one that came up. The condition wasn't nearly as good as the one on eBay.
I don't think the one on eBay was that good, actually.
It wasn't bad. I'd give it like a 8 out of 10.
Oh, you think you're OCD. Well, I'm only OCD or strict with like with the Supergraph. So for because of what it is, that it's not available for sale that often, I gave it a 6.
With that, I think you've got to realize like they're so rare. Like any Supergraph coming up is like special. So I think you've got to take that into perspective. Like an 8, a Supergraph that comes up, that's an 8. It's like, okay, that's... Like, if a Sherpa graph comes up and it's an 8, it's like, okay, I know I can wait and I can find, like, a 9 or a 10, like, and it won't be that long. If a Sherpa graph comes up and it's an 8, it's like, well, if I really want one, it could be a really long time before a better one comes up. So, I view it maybe a little differently from because of that.
Fair points, and I agree with them as well. It's just, to me, it's the holy grail. It's like, I see it in a way, like, it's like if you buy a unicorn with half of the unicorn. You know, like you want the full experience, you know, you want the whole unicorn.
Yeah. I'll tell you, Nico, I think I mentioned him earlier at _JimJupiter on Instagram. He just got a really nice Supergraph, and it was the one that they made for the Tokyo Olympics. The one that was multicolored red and black external bezel for the shooting.
Yeah. That's the one I want. Cause they only made like 8, I think, or 10.
Good luck.
It might be a long journey, you know, it might be a 10-year, 20-year wait, but that's the one that I want, and that's the one I think it's worth waiting for.
Yeah, those are so cool, but Nico just got a really nice one. I know he was excited when he picked that up, but just so cool. I mean, a watch made for competition Olympic shooting, does it get any cooler than that?
Yeah, plus it's like the clay shooting or the skeet shooting. I'm like, I love clay. I love skeet. Like, I want it even more now. I originally thought it was Eve's Supergraph, but then someone told me that no, that like it's a different one. Because the first one I saw was Eve's.
Yeah.
And I was like, my God, that thing is just a beauty.
Yeah, that the Olympic one is just like the grail of the grail Supergraphs. Like, it's so cool. And again, I'll say again, like the fact that it was designed and modified for such a specific purpose that, like, you know, it's not like a diving watch or a, you know, a GMT where you're flying, like that's something a lot of people do. It's like Olympic competition shooting. Like, how many people realistically are going to use that watch for that purpose? So the fact that they actually made a watch for that is so cool.
I mean, I will, but not for the Olympics. I'm not even close to being like fourth bench. But no, it's a really awesome watch. And like I said, in general, the Supergraph is awesome. But like I said, I feel, and I shared this with Matt, and I told him, I feel like it's, you know, if you're going to get a Supergraph, you want the best Supergraph you can get. And you're right. And he kind of said the same thing. Well, these don't come up for sale that often. So like, it's the Holy Grail. I'm like, no, the Holy Grail is the Olympic Supergraph.
Right.
And honestly, I thought it was undervalued. And I think the reason why is the pandemic. You know, I thought I had guesstimated 12. And so that thing's going to go for 12 minimum.
Yeah, I thought 8,000 bucks was a pretty decent price. I thought it would go for more. I thought that was pretty fair. So kind of kicking myself a little bit for not maybe going for it. But
and it was US sales only also, no?
I think it was. Yeah, it was.
You had less competition.
I know. Again, kicking myself. But the thrill of the chase, I suppose, another one will come up at some point.
I don't think I've heard who, and if you have, you can tell me after if you're able. I don't think I've heard who got it.
I think I know.
You think you know?
I think so, yeah. But it's an Enikar person, so it's going good home, if I'm correct.
Okay. Yeah, no, because I know the one I shared, remember on that auction that we saw, and there was a, so like the Sherpa Ops also is one of them where like they come up often, but usually they come up in pretty shitty condition.
Yep.
So the Sherpa Ops, for those that don't know, go ahead and Google it, but it's basically like a PVD coating, even though it's not PVD. It's been debated a lot in the community. I think they used a different process, but it looks so that you can, if you don't Google it and you're lazy like me, it's basically looks like a PVD coating. So there was an auction. I can't remember what auction house it was. Nobody knew about it. No one. And a Sherpa ops usually goes for like, I don't know, I want to say maybe what, anywhere between 4 and 6.
Yeah.
So 5 as an average. That thing went for like 1,200.
The Sherpa ops is super cool. Like in that coating chips off and wears off and flakes off really easily. So the stainless steel gets exposed pretty quick, but the inner bezel is a little different than a traditional Ultra Dive. And then obviously the black coating, whatever it is different than a traditional Ultra Dive. So like it's a stealthy watch. I've never owned one, but definitely cool. Definitely. There's one for sale right now. My buddy Cam, who runs Craft and Tailored, does a lot of vintage Rolex, but he has an ops for sale right now. That's pretty nice if anyone's interested. They're cool. Definitely cool.
Yeah, no, they're awesome. I'm lucky enough to own one, which is what I'm wearing right now. The one that on that auction, I think it's already changed hands twice, and it's been on eBay twice.
Oh, God. And it's probably gone up 20% in price each time.
Yes, basically, yes. And it's in
maybe more than that.
It's in very good more if you consider what it was bought for at auction, you know, like
right.
But it's actually in very good condition. Like it's not bad at all. So the person that got a steal. And unfortunately, I feel like if they're buying it and they're like selling it, I'm like, come on, man, you could have. I mean, I can see the opportunity of doing it, but shit. I would have bought it. I would have kept that one and sold this one.
Yeah.
But no, that was a great find for like that person. Like I tried bidding, but I didn't know that I registered and I did all that shit. But apparently you have to like give them your.
Yeah, you got to pre-register and they verify your purchasing power and all that.
Well, I think it was more of a, if I remember correctly, they wanted me to send a copy of my ID.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, there's 2 minutes left. Come on, just let me bid on the damn thing.
Dude, one of my biggest Enicar regrets, it's basically that same story. So Yahoo Auction Japan, it's kind of like eBay owned by Yahoo and you can only bid if you're in Japan, but they have these proxy services where you can bid with a company, you can bid and then a company in Japan gets the watch, puts the bid in for you, they get the watch and ship it to you, like an intermediary kind of thing. And there was a really nice blue dial aquagraph Mark IV that was for sale on Yahoo Japan auctions. And it wasn't that expensive. It was like $4,500 US. And I saw it late. There was like maybe 5 minutes left. And I was like, oh man. And like, I quickly signed up. I went to bid and like, I didn't give them the information they needed. And I missed out. And I was like, man, if I had prepared better for this, I would have bought it. Like a white dial aquagraph is another grail for me.
Yeah, mine too.
I'll definitely take the blue dial Mark IV aquagraph, and I could have had that one for a really nice number, but it slipped through my fingers.
Us Enicar collectors, we're really crafty. So we not only look at eBay, we look at eBay auctions and that are not eBay in like Switzerland, Sweden, Japan, South America. Like I look everywhere. So I look at anything that's equivalent to eBay in another country that is not eBay. I look at it. And like Michael said, there's proxy guys. What I do is I go to eBay. Let's say I want to go to eBay Germany. I go to eBay.de or whatever the extension is.
Yep. eBay.it.
Yeah, because they won't, even though if you go to US eBay or Australia eBay or wherever you are in the world, even if you hit on the options worldwide, sometimes they will not show because that seller only wants to sell in their country. So you have to go to their eBay website and put that extension, and they will only sell to, like, let's say you're in eBay Germany. They will only sell to people in Germany. So you contract with like third parties that will bid for you, or they will, you'll bid and then you give the seller the address and they will send it to that company and that company sends it to you. And this goes for, I think most Enicar people do this.
Yeah, that you're giving away our secrets. That's I do that a lot. Like ebay.it, and then you know the ones that'll only ship within the EU or within Italy that wouldn't populate on just regular ebay.com here in the States. And again, back to the Anacart community, like there's someone in those countries or in the EU that like is always willing to, well, you can have it shipped to me. Like one that comes to mind is actually the JetGraph I'm wearing right now. I bought from a guy in Germany who only wanted to ship within the EU. So one of my Anacart collector friends, he has a great collection. His Instagram is at ENABRANTAIN66, ENABRANTAIN66. I still don't understand what that means.
I think it's a Star Wars thing.
Oh, is it? Well, he's a super nice guy. Great Anacart collection. He lives in Germany, so I had the watch shipped to him. And it's funny, he opened it, busted out his, like, not his phone camera, his, like, real camera, and took all these awesome, like, high-res pics for me, and then sent it to me, and it ended up being a great buy. So just another example of how good this community is.
I didn't give away all the secrets. I just said eBay Germany. You said eBay Italy, so we've given away two secrets.
That strategy goes for anything, not just Anacart. Like you gotta do some sleuthing sometimes, depending on what you're looking for.
I've noticed that on anything Anacart, like you'll find shit, and maybe this is true for other brands, other vintage brands, like you're saying, but maybe I don't know because I don't look for them. But Anacart, sometimes you'll find shit in another country that you don't see, like on eBay Global, or there's other auction sites that are not eBay, and you're like, holy shit. And like Google Translate is your best friend.
Yeah, get the Google Translate Chrome extension, and then like right click translate this page, and no matter what you're on, you'll at least get the gist of it. The translations aren't perfect, but you can at least navigate the website.
And then, like I said, that's not a secret per se, but this will apply not only for Anacart, but like if you're into other vintage brands, by all means, go ahead and try that. I saw a white aquagraph in Yahoo Japan, and I didn't know there was third parties yet that would help you out. So I just like, shit, I just saw it go away. I'm like, cue the sad music, the sad violin music playing right now.
Steve at Anacart Forums just picked up a white dial aquagraph.
I saw that. That's the only thing that I, well, obviously there's two things missing, but this is not about me. It's totally all about you. What is missing in your collection, or what's in your radar?
A supergraph for sure. A white dial aquagraph I really want. I'd like a really early, like a Mark I sword hands Sherpa graph, Sterling Moss. That would be cool. The real Jim Clark. So, you know, an early white dial Sherpa graph. Trying to think what else. Like those are a white dial ultra dive for sure. My friend Andrew has a killer one. Every time I handle it, I'm just like, oh, I freaking need one of these. Those are probably my Anacart grails.
So what you're saying is that you and I, if this isn't an auction, you and I will be bidding against each other, because you just mentioned mine.
Which one? The white dial aquagraph?
No, like every single one you mentioned are the ones that I want.
Oh, yeah. Well, you and me plus probably like a bunch of other people. So we'll all just be killing each other, outbidding each other.
There's a gentleman's game, you know, like, yeah, if you just bought one, I'll be like, all right, here, you can have it. Like, if like, at least I like you and I have talked, you know, like,
you know, if you get it and be like, all right, let me get dibs though, if you want to sell it, which I've done with a lot of people. Yeah, everyone's like diplomatic about it, you know.
Yeah, like that auction like that you told me, like, I was like, nah, I won't bid. It's all you, man. But I know other people were bidding, and then you were like, nah, it's not in that great of a condition. So
yeah,
even though we don't know each other, I think we talk a shit ton in a car. Everybody does in the community, and you learn to trust them and who to trust and who not to trust. So that's the beauty about it.
And I think people generally, like, we're all friends, and people generally kind of know like what people are looking for, like in the short term. So like, you know, if something like, I know like my friend Vince really wants a, you know, like a Jim Clark, like a real Jim Clark white dial Sherpa graph. And like every time I'd love to have one too, but like, I know he really wants one that's been looking forever. So anytime like a potential one that he would buy pops up, I send it to him and stuff like that. We're all cool about it.
Yeah, no. And like I said, those are the ones that like I'm looking for, exactly the ones, you know, like Supergraph is the grail, the white Aquagraph. I mean, I would love one, but you know what? Also the all black Aquagraph. I've already owned the white subdial one, but now that I have the jet with the white subdials, I feel like an all black.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Yeah, they're awesome. Matt has an all black one that he just got, and man, it's beautiful.
Yeah, I saw that. That's a sexy watch.
It's just awesome. And I never thought I would like it in all black. I was like, no, the white subdials I think is better. And then I got the jet graph and I'm like, well, I'm still missing the aqua because I sold it. So like, then I saw he posted it the all black. I'm like, shit, no, it's an all black for sure. And the Jim Clark, man, that's like everybody's dream, man. Like every Antiquar collector wants a Jim Clark. You know, I settled for the Galley Jim Clark.
Yeah, it's funny. There's I don't even know the brands, like a bunch of different like Swiss brands that went extinct during the quartz crisis that made like very similar looking watches like that. So people will buy them as kind of like their holdover until they find their real Jim Clark. So that Galley, I guess, would probably be that for you, right?
Don't quote me on this. So I think he did Anikar, Galley, and then Breitling, or Galley, Anikar, Breitling.
I believe Galley was a cousin of the Anikar family. There's a familial relation there.
Yeah, there were cousins. And that's also why we see Galley related to like those racing chronographs, yep, that we see every now and then, the Jules Racing. Yeah, they were all related. No, I love my Galley MC12, which is the Jim, they call it the Jim Clark. I don't know exactly if he wore in, I'm pretty sure he wore in a car first, but I was like, you know, I'm never going to get that shit in the condition that I want compared to the one I have, the Galley one. So like, this is in like fabulous condition. I got it from the original owner. It's a dude that was a pilot. And I'm like, yeah, the story behind it is also badass. So it's not like I'm going to get a Jim Clark and tell you, yeah, I got it from a race car driver.
Yeah, with that provenance, you know, you're not going to find something with that cool of a story.
Yeah, I know. But anyway, so we're going into like an hour and 20 minutes. So let's wrap this up if we don't want to lose more people. Hopefully we still have a couple of listeners that stayed along in our awesome Anikar conversation, which we haven't said Viva Anikar yet.
Yep, Viva Anikar.
Let's wrap it up, man. We'll wrap it up with, you've already mentioned your recommendations from your article, but are you still firm with that? You're firm with those three recommendations, Anikar wise?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Like, I'll throw some others out there, right? Like, if you're thinking about dipping your toes into Anikar, and, you know, so I mentioned the Sherpa Date, the Big Eye, and the Sherpa Jet / Sherpa Super Jet. His names are all like tongue twisters. Some others that I think are good starting points, like any dive, like Anikar dive watch, they're super cool. With like, if you can get one with like the turtle case, that's super cool. Or even like the ones with like the candlestick second hands, super cool, you know. And not like, you know, they're relatively reasonable from a price perspective, but I think those are interesting starting points. What else? I mean, if you want to spend like a little more in ultra dive, like, you can't go wrong there. And for people that don't know, the bridge between the two crowns on the Ultra Dive was made so that when divers were wearing them diving, they wouldn't get seaweed wrapped around the two crowns. I just think that's so interesting and so cool.
And plus, I've only seen it on Anikar watches.
Yeah, I haven't seen it on anything else. But, you know, if you have, you know, a little more money you want to spend, that's a cool starting point. I mean, really, you can't go wrong. Like I said, as long as you do your research, educate yourself, find the best example of what you want for what you can afford, and you'll do all right. Like, and when in doubt, reach out to any of the million names that have been dropped during this conversation, because everyone's really, really nice and helpful. And like, this is the last thing I'll say. Like, with Anikar getting more popular and more people taking an interest in it and prices going up, yeah, that stinks for us because we can't get watches at price points that we used to. But on the flip side, it's not a bad thing, right? It means that more people are becoming interested in the brand, more people are buying the watches, more people are selling the watches, and the market is picking up. And like, you know, as a fan of the brand and as an ambassador, I guess, to some extent, for Anikar, like, that's a good thing. So you know, the more the merrier. This isn't like an exclusive club or an exclusive collecting community. The more the merrier. So always here to help. You can reach out to me personally on Instagram. You know, if you see something, you want to authenticate it, you want to see if, you know, the price sounds right, whatever it is, reach out. Happy to help.
I'm sure the listeners will appreciate that. And no, by all means, I do not mean to come out as someone that's, I don't want to come out as someone that's, that this is an exclusive club. Not at all. I think every inner car collector is passionate, and we love talking about inner car and sharing our knowledge, even if it's a little bit knowledge in my case. And then in Michael's case, he has way more knowledge. And then there's other people that have way, way more knowledge as well, such as like Martin and Steve and Matt and Nico.
Yeah, I don't handle to those guys like Nico, Martin, Steve, Matt. There's another there's a collector, Martin. I mean, there's so many. Like those guys know way more than I do. And I still look to them for so many things. Like, and they help. They always help me. Like, it's, you know, it's like anything else. You learn more as time goes on, and you'll make mistakes. But if you take your time and do your research, you'll make out okay.
For sure. And like you said, I'm also, if anybody has any questions, contact Michael, contact me, contact anyone in the inner car community. And 9 out of 10 times, they will help you out and they will tell you or point you in the right direction for anything. Now, before we close this show, I want to ask you, because I saw on your Instagram, you have a lovely Universal Genève Tri-Compacts. What do you pick, inner car or your Tri-Compacts?
I mean, I pick Enicar all day, every day, but...
Holy shit, man. That's really hard. Really hard.
UG in general, like, it's a special brand. It definitely has a special place in my heart as a collector. And, you know, there's Grailish watches that they made that I will own at some point. And, you know, quality watches and the design, all of that, like, is great. But for me, like, just personally, yeah, I'll take Enicar over anything. It's just, it's too much fun.
Wow. Because your Tri-Compacts you have is, man, it's gorgeous. It's lovely. I love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. It's awesome. It's awesome. Honestly.
Yeah. UG made, I mean, the Nina Rins, the Aero Compacts, the Claptons, the UG Big Eye, probably like my ultimate UG Grail, which I know is kind of like a polarizing piece in the UG community. But man, there's a lot of grails there too, so you can't have them all, I guess, but
if you keep it up on your UG collection, we'll have to do another episode with talking about UG, because I know very little about it, so we can do a part two UG. I know there's like a few kind of under the radar UGs, because UG is like vintage UG is to the point where it's, to me, most of them are, I don't feel comfortable paying those prices anymore.
Yeah. Well, they're generally more expensive, I think, than Enicars. But
I know you have, and I've been eyeing your Railroad UG.
Yeah, those are cool. Those are actually, I mean, they've gotten more expensive, but they're definitely affordable entry points to the brand. So yeah, I'd love to come back on. I'm always down to talk watches, man. And whether it's Enicar, whether it's Rolex UG, you know, anything. I've owned a lot of different stuff over the years. Like I've found what I'm most interested in, but that doesn't mean I'm not interested in other stuff. So love to come back on anytime you'll have me.
No, we'll have you on for sure. We'll talk. We can keep going hours and maybe another hour or even two, but we'll lose folks, I think, after like an hour and 20 or more. But no, definitely I'll definitely have you back. We'll talk.
Awesome.
I know you have also UG, and you also have like vintage Rolex. So that's like, that's already two topics in like another podcast. So no, definitely I'll have you back on, man.
Yeah, I'd love to, man. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you so much, Michael, for joining me and enlightening us with Enicar and for sharing that passion that you and I both share as well for Enicar, and being so welcoming to new folks and sharing that love for Enicar. And like you said, if anybody has any questions, follow Michael at Instagram. He's at CT Watch Guy. If you have any questions, just let me know as well. I'm at Brownsville Watch Guy. And just in general, you have anything for the podcast, anyone you want to see that I can bring on, just any suggestions or anything. Even if you want to tell me that I suck, I don't mind it. I'm okay. You won't hurt my feelings. But anything in a car or anything watches, you can you can reach me, reach Michael, and please be sure to go and follow Fifth Wrist on Instagram and jump onto the website and review one of your watches. I'll certainly try to convince Michael to review one of his inner car watches or that lovely tri-compact that I've been talking nonstop for the last 5 minutes.
I'll do a review.
Awesome. Yeah. And if you also, if you want to join our Slack group, just go contact at fifthwrist.com, send an email or contact me and I'll send you a link if you want to join our Slack group. And please like and subscribe to the podcast. And remember, people, stay on time.